So we're going to talk about those Kiruvim, those angelic figures that are on top of the Aron. We'll begin with the a description of them, at least, or what their function is in the Torah. And then I'll describe three broad approaches as to what we think they are and their goals are. Three or four purposes or goals, what the Kruvim are, what they symbolize. So we begin, the Torah tells us in Parshas Truma, we're supposed to build an Aron. And then in Perachov Hei, Pasuk Yud Zayin, the Torah tells us, well, v'asisecha poros zahav tahor, you build this cover of gold, amasai machit zirakav, amam machit zirakba, 2.5 by 1.5 amos. V'asisa shnaim kruvim zahav, you're going to make two kruvim, golden kruvim, mikshata sel sam, mishnek sosakaporas, you make them solid, one piece from the two ends of the kaporas. Vase kruvachad mikatzamizeh, kruvachad mikatzamizeh, so one kruv on one side, one kruv on the other side. Min hakaporas tasuas kruvim mashnek sosav, from the kaporas, you should make them on two different sides, two different ends. Vayu akruvim parsech rafayim lamalas, now they have these wings, they're spreading their wings above, like high. So chim chadfim al kaporas, they're also covering, like schach, sochachim, they're also covering with their wings on the kaporas, so it's like spreading high, and also covering the kaporas. So if nehemi shalachiv, they're facing each other, el kaporas yu perei akruvim, to the kaporas, the kruvim should be faced. V'nasatas al kaporas al aron b'malas, so you place the kaporas on the aron above, vel haron titera sodus sher tere lecha, and to the Aaron, you should place the Eidus, it's referring to the Torah, the Luchos, not our topic for tonight. V'no'adati l'cha sham, and I'll meet you there. V'dibarti itcha mi'al kaporos, I will speak with you from on top of the kaporos, b'bein shnei ha'kruvim, from between the two kruvim, asher al Aaron ho'idus, which is on top of the Aaron, is kol asher atzavah s'chal b'nei Yisrael. So whatever I want to command to you, says God, I'm going to be speaking between these two kruvim. Okay, so what have you heard about what these two kruvim are? You've heard something, right? So what have you heard in your studies in the past? What have you heard the two kruvim are?
Like two kids, they say.
Two kids. What else? Anything else? Two children.
Some say it's like a older man and a younger person.
Okay, so maybe two children, an older person, a younger person. Okay. Anything else? Any other thoughts?
The Chabad said angels.
Angels. Yeah, maybe angels. Good.
Some have pictures of, I don't know, pictures of lions and stuff.
What, on the Kruvim?
No. The pictures of Kruvim, which they have, like, look like lions with wings. That's not like the way it is, isn't it?
Okay, so we have angels, we have children, a parent and a child. Good, we got something to work with here. First approach, and so it's important that depending on what they are, so then we have to understand what the purpose is. In other words, when you see the Kruvim, or when you visualize the Kruvim, what are you visualizing, right? So the Rashbam actually says, what are the Kruvim? Ophos, birds. There were two birds. Why do you think he says they were birds?
Because they had knafayim.
Right, they're porsei knafayim. They're spreading wings, so they're birds. And actually, but more than that, he actually brings a pasuk from Yechezkel. He says, "Es kruv mshach hasochech of gadol bal knafayim." It's a large bird that has wings. That's how he explains it. There's a pasuk in Yechezkel, Perichav Ches, pasuk Yudalid. So the word, I think, I'm not sure how to pronounce it again, mumushach or mimshach. I think it's a very difficult word to translate. But it seems the Mefarshim understand it in Sefer Yechezkel as a large winged bird. So let's think about this for a second. Let's assume that the Kruvim were large winged birds. Why is it important to place on top of the Aron two large winged birds? Any thoughts?
Like kanaf in the Torah, it says, like a leg kanaf, kanaf is something that covers.
Right.
Maybe it's like Like we say that it, like Hashem is like covering us, you know, like tafak kanfei hashkina, we say.
I mean, I thought in a very, I'm a simple person, so I think very simply, if
protection.
It's okay. So the one end, it's what is it protecting?
The Aaron.
The Aaron, the Aaron's the Torah, but the idea of it. So right, the kruvim serve two functions. It's parsei chrafim lamala, is spreading the wings above, and also covering with the wings the kapora. So it's protecting the Torah. But I think it's like it's like it's flapping its swing or spreading its wing, like it's going heavenward. It's going up. It's going up and up. So I think when you see these two birds, or you visualize these two large winged birds on top of the Aaron, perhaps you think about that it's symbolic of the heavenly nature of Torah contained within the Aaron. In other words, the Torah is what allows us to ascend to heaven, as it were. Allows us to transcend our natural selves. Allows us to fly higher and higher, right? To feel divine, to feel something special, to feel something different. That's the image that perhaps the Torah wants to convey when it talks about the Kruvim as really large birds that are flapping their wings, spreading their wings, lamala. So that could be the heavenly nature of the Torah. That's one, perhaps, image, depending on what the Kruvim are. The Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim has a very fascinating approach, and he actually says it's angels. We think about Kruvim, right? It seems from Parshas Bereishis, I didn't look at this inside, but I think the general understanding, I think, is that you have the Kruvim, when Adam and Chava are kicked out of the Gan Eden, there are these two Kruvim with fiery swords that are protecting the garden. I think we generally understand them to be angels. And the question is, what are the Kruvim being angels symbolized? So the Rambam says something very, very, maybe we haven't thought about it, but he says, he makes the following point. This is in the Mor Nevuchim, Chela Gimel, Perek Mem Hei. He says, "Kfar no dasha pinat emunat hanvua kodem la'amunat haTorah." In other words, before you want to have faith in the Torah, believe in the Torah, you have to believe in prophecy. Why is that? She'im ein navi ein Torah. If there's no prophet, there's no Torah. In other words, if you don't believe in prophecy, the Torah came to us through a revelation, through nevuah, through prophecy. So if there's no nevuah, there's no Torah, right? And then step two is vanavi lo tavo. Tavohu hanavuah rak bemsaut hamalach. How does a navi get his prophecy? Through a malach. Pasuk says vayikra malach Hashem vayomala malach Hashem v'zeh harbe milispor, and it is too much to tell. Ad shemoshe rabenu tchilas nevuaso haisav malach. The beginning of Moshe's prophecy was through a malach. That an angel of God appeared to Moshe with a fiery furnace. So what does the Rambam say? Hine yisbar. Shemunas mitzius hamalachim kodemes lemunas hanavuah. That the faith in the existence, you have to believe in the existence of angels. Because you first believe in that, and once you believe in that, that's kodemes lemunas hanavuah. Then that precedes the faith in Nevuah. And the faith in prophecy precedes faith in Torah. In other words, okay, I believe in Torah, that the Torah is true. Well, how do you believe the Torah is true? We got it through prophecy. Well, how did God connect? How did God speak to us? How did God connect to Nevi'im? God is beyond time, beyond space. How did he connect? How did he communicate with Nevi'im? Through a malach. So in other words, you need to believe in a malach to believe in Nevuah, and you need to believe in Nevuah to believe in the Torah. And obviously, and then he says, V'kasher yisbarish ha'emes l'chamim v'noda b'mofis. And once the truth is explained to wise people, and it's known through evidence that you see, she'yesh nimsa, or you don't see, she'yesh nimsa she'enu guf v'lo koach haguf. So you know that there is this being that doesn't have a body, that's God, he's one. So number one is you have to believe that there's some that there's a God who doesn't have physical form. V'yesh gam ken nimtzos acheros nivdals. And there are other creatures or other beings, other entities that are separate. She'enam gufos, that don't have bodies. Remember, the Rambam is of the belief that angels cannot have a physical manifestation on this earth.
But they don't actually have wings, according to the Rambam.
What?
They don't actually have wings.
Okay. Ah, okay.
Because, you know, it's not physical. So.
Right. Okay. But who is shesh? Okay, then what are they anyway? I mean.
Well, there's some spiritual something.
I understand, but there's something spiritual. But who is sheshafa aleim tuvo voro yitalev heim alachim kumon shebiyardu? And God gave over his goodness and his light to the world. Then there's the malachim are the mechanism to share God's light and goodness with the world. And he says, "No da b'meshah malachim ahem heimashi yasimu emes b'fi anavim." And also, it's the angels that give truth to the words of the prophets. Lo atzlamim v'ashirot, not the idols, not these asherah trees. So the faith, the belief in the existence of angels comes after the belief in God. In other words, you believe in God, and then you believe that there are angels, and the angels are the mechanism through which God communicates with the world, with the Nevi'im. So the messenger is the angel, the message is Nevuah, and then you believe the Torah was given through Nevuah. So you see how that goes. 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, step by step. That's how we understand, that's how prophecy and Torah were arranged. And to strengthen this faith in angels, so Hashem commanded to make on the Aaron the form of two different angels, the Kayim Mitzius, HaMalachim Bemunas Amon, to further establish the existence of angels in the faith of the people. Shehudas amiti sheni lemunat mitzias Hashem. That comes second. Like, you know, first, the first faith is belief in God. Second is the amuna in faith in angels. Vuat chalan in vua. This leads to prophecy, belief in prophecy, or this angels lead to prophecy, La Torah, Umavata Avodazara, this cancels Avodazara. In other words, we get our prophecy, we get our spiritual powers not through Avodazara, but through these angels that don't have physical form. Now, we struggle, right? Because we don't believe that they have physical form, but we have a physical form just to make us understand that there are these angels that don't have physical form. But we have a physical form to ingrain this belief in us. Now, look what he writes. Why two? V'ilu ha'isa tzura acha, tzura's kruv achat. If there's only one kruv, what would you think? Hayu ba'ata'a gam kin shayu choshim shi tzura sakel ne'avad. You're going to think this is God. K'mo shahayu osim avde avadazar. That's what the idolaters, they would make. They would create, right, God, images representing God. That we're not going to do. We're willing to create images that represent the mechanism by which God communicates with the world, and there we're not so concerned about this relita vodazara, because again, we don't bow down to the angels, right? We're not serving the angels. They're simply a mechanism. So this kind of thing, like, we need to create something to strengthen the faith, but not that it should lead Bnei Yisrael astray to worship it. So that's why you made two. We say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elkeinu, Hashem Echad. Hashem is one, but make these two kruvim. So we know these two kruvim don't represent God. Yisbar kima das b'mitzius hamalachim v'shem mavim. We know that okay, there's two and there are more. There are many angels, so it's not God. This hopefully that will not lead the people to stray to think that they are God. Since they know that God is one and they have these two kruvim, the two kruvim cannot be God, so we're not going to worship them. It's a fascinating perspective that we're basically saying that the reason why you create these two kruvim is to teach the Bnei Yisrael the belief in angels, which leads to a belief in prophecy, which leads to a belief in Torah, And this is obviously where, this is the place where Hashem is speaking to Moshe and is giving the prophecy to Moshe, right? And telling Moshe everything they should tell B'nai Israel. He's giving over the Torah to the B'nai Israel in this place through the Malachim. That's Rabbi, the Rabbah. Yeah.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
The Rambam didn't include in the Ani Mamins Bemun Hashema about Malachim?
Right. Not sure. I mean, you could say that Nevuah, I guess that it's probably part and parcel of Nevuah. You believe in prophecy that Hashem, you have to believe that Hashem communicates with us. Okay? So that's a fundamental belief, and this might be a side point how he does it. You know, is that if you're not sure how he does it, is that something that will lead you astray or not? That's a good question. Why did Rabbam include? There are a lot of things that we believe. Is it make it in? Does it not make it in? It's probably subsumed under Nevuah. Let's say someone believes in Nevuah, but they don't believe that it came through angels. Is that something that's going to lead you astray? So maybe not. I don't know exactly, but maybe going along that thought. Yeah, Esther.
No, wait, interesting.
Esther, I think, had it raised her hand. Or Becca had it raised her hand. Yeah.
What's it called? So... it's a bit like off the topic, but it's like with the angels. How did Moshe get like attacked by
Yaakov
get attacked by an angel if like it doesn't have some physical form?
Yeah, you should ask your father. He has thoughts on that. But but basically, so there are some rabbis who believe. There are some rabbis who believe that angels can take physical form. The rabbim will say that this was perhaps in a vision, and it wasn't real. He'll have to explain these psukim as it actually didn't happen in reality, but it happened sort of in a vision. And then the question is, why was he injured through that? So then there are different approaches how he could be injured through that. Maybe even if you have this kind of vision where you did this, could that affect you physically afterwards? But yeah, the rabbim will say that that did not happen in reality. That was more of a vision. Okay. Baruch, you had a comment?
No, just that the Rambam, I think, in other places doesn't say exactly like here, because it's like in Baruch Inashu, we say, Neshatav Esh Lohet, or Seruchot Malachav, that there are a lot of different messengers, correct, not necessarily these, you know, I think it's like wrong to think that they have wings and all that stuff. You know?
Right, but, so, yeah.
But they're like, it's just a message, something that a Navi receives a message.
Right.
We call that a Malach, you know, Malach gave it to
me. Yeah, so the Rambam.
Yeah,
I understand. The Rambam believes it's these kind of spirits. So again, what people commonly associate with an angel, and they, right, maybe you have to see like what you know, perhaps with the Nevi'im, when the Nevi'im may have seen images or you know in the Nevuos of angels, what did they see exactly? So we have to think about that a bit.
Yeah.
Okay, so the third most popular approach is actually that it's you know maybe a child. The Gemara says he actually cites a pasuk in I think in Yechezkel where he talks about varba panim. It's like about an angel that had four faces or varba panim la'achad, and there were four faces to one. Pnei achad, pnei kruv. One face was a kruv. Pnei sheni, pnei adam. One face was a person, and the shlishi was pnei aryeh, was a lion, and the revi pnei nesher. So it's four headed being. That was kruv, person, lion, and eagle. So my kruv, what's a kruv? Amar Rabbi Abahu, kirivya. It's like a child. She came above a currently unuka rivya. They call a child rivya. So kiruvim, the word is actually, it's like a rivya, like a child. And so, but then wait a second. If it's a child, so a pop asks a baya, may atu dixi, pnei achad, pnei akuv, pnei asheni, pnei adam, vashishi, pnei aryeh, vavi, pnei nesh, he quotes all pasuk. How can you say that a kruv is a person, a child, if indeed, what do we say the four faces? One was a person, and one was a kruv. A kruv's a child, so it's the same thing as a person. So he says, ape ravarvev ape zutre. So one, no, an adam, a person, an adam is an adult, and a kruv is a child. That's his idea, that it's a child, it's a rivia, it's a child. And Rashi takes that view that it's a demus partsuf tidok lahem. It's the image of a child. Now, the Maharal in the Gur Aryeh, I didn't bring you the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra asks the question. He says, well, I understand. The kaf, the Kruvim is a verb, is like a, not a verb, a noun. It, why are you saying ke means like Ruvim, like Rivya? The word Kruvim is a noun. It's part of the, it's part of the word. So how can you say it means like a child? It, it's, we don't say it's, you know, the ke, it's part of the Shoresh. So, right, he says, Ibn Ezra, Hiksha, the kaf, Kruvim, Shoresh. It's the kaf is the root. Varaya, ha Kruvim, the Kruvim. How can you say it means the like? You know, Vahe Ayidia. Vedabal kaf on Shimush. Kusha Zuz Eres. It's not a question. Shigam Raza, Modim Bazek, Kia kaf, who Shoresh, Veloshimush. They all agree, Chazal agree that the kaf is also part of the root. It's not like an add on, a prefix. Shema Farshim, Kia Shema Zeh, who Shem Murkav. It's a complex name. It's a different part. It's Kamo Shimuel. When someone's named Shmuel, you're saying it's from Hashem. I asked it. You know, I asked from Hashem. It's a name. It's the full word's a noun, but the noun came from two parts. Yerubaal, Yerubahabal. The name came from different parts. So what's the Kruv? That Kruvi means, what, how the name Kruvim come about? It's an image that Yesh Lo Tsuras Nar Katan. It's like, means it's an image of a young boy. It's Kiruvim. It's like a Rivia. Kiruvia, we'll call it Kruv. So that's how he explains. So he's not bothered by the question of the Ibn Ezra. Now the Gemara in Yoma says in Daf Nun Dalet Amud Aleph, Amar Rav Katina, B'Shah Shal Yisrael Olim L'Rego. When the Jewish people would go up to the regal, Megalim Lam Etz HaParoches, they'd uncover the Paroches. That's the curtain that separated the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So they can look in and they can see the Aaron. Umar Lahem Etz HaKruvim, they would see their Kruvim. Shal Yimurim Zebazah, they're embracing each other. Umar Lahem, they would say to them, Ruchi Baskam Fe'amakum Kichi Bas Zachar Nekeva. See the love that's before God, like the love of a male and a female. So the indication here is that the Kruvim were, so one approach is that it was a young boy and a young girl, and when they're embracing, it shows the love, expression of the love of between Hashem and the Bnei Yisrael. So that's one approach, by the way. The I don't know if you have time to read the Geras HaKodesh of the Ramban. He basically says that it's like, you know, how big question, how could Hashem do this? Embracing a man and a woman in the holiest place, how could it be? You know, it's very deep. It's very deep. He says that if man and woman are together, right, and Ish V'Isha, that they're together, and they're the Shalom Bayis together, then Zachu Shechina B'neihem, right, the Yud, if they're not with Shalom Bayis, so then God is removed, the Yud and the Hey are removed, so then it's just Eish, it's fire, it's burning, it's not good. But the idea is that no, the embrace of a man and a woman, right, true love, that is something that's very powerful, and that's the most powerful form of love, and that represents, and then when a man is mischaber with his wife, and Kedusha and Tara, and purity and holiness, the Shechina is among them. So this whole approach is saying,
it's an intimate relationship.
Right.
Just like you can have an intimate relationship with Hashem yourself.
Correct. Yes. So this, right, as opposed to, right, saying the large winged birds of saying that the Torah is perhaps, observing the Torah makes us transcend ourselves, soar heavenly, and it's not about building emunah in the angels. It's about the love, that the purpose of the Kruvim is to demonstrate the love between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and us, male and female. Now the Torah Tamima just points out, he says, no. It says that when you see the Kruvim, you see the love of God that's like a male and a female. But it doesn't mean the Kruvim were male and female. And he says here, actually, he says that the second to last line of Torah Tamima writes, he says, "Demut tsurasa be'emes hayushneim tsuras zachar." So they're two males, and they're hugging each other, but they're embracing like a male and a female. Why does he want to say that? Because the word shnayim, it says there were shnei kruvim, but it also says shnayim. Right? If you look above, what's the difference between shnei? It says vasisa shnayim kruvim zahav. Why didn't it say vasisa shnei? So the Torah Tamima points out that the word shnayim implies hishtavut, that they're the same. So he wants to say that they were, so we have one approach that they were young boy, young girl. Another approach is two boys, two zacharim. And then we have Rabbeinu Bachai, who says what Baruch Hu said initially. He says an older man and a young child. So what's the difference, by the way, if the image is, let's say, a male and a female, or a man and a child? What different image is created between these two? If you're saying that,
son, maybe
what?
Father and son, maybe.
Yeah, I'm saying. So what's the difference?
In other words, the older and younger would be father and son.
That correct. Really. And it means that the difference, I think, yeah,
inclusive everyone.
Everyone, okay, right, everyone. I would think if it's referring to love, where they're embracing each other, so do we want to view, like, our love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as, like, you know, the highest form of love, male and the female, or is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking care of us, protecting us, right? That's the father and the son. You know, different images, you know, convey different feelings when you see this. Kosh Baruch loves, Kosh Baruch takes care of us. One final approach. The Meshech Chachma says, it's not about demonstrating that Hashem loves us. But he said, what's the Kruvim? There's no Avoda, there's no Machshava. The goal of the Kruvim is not that we're going to worship it. We're not concerned about worshiping the Kruvim. Ragzel Kamoa Kabarnit, it's like the captain. Rotzel Adas Haruach La'adnota, where does the wind blow? Osa Torah, right? So Cain Osa Kadosh Baruch Osa Baruch Baruch Simanim Itzunim Shem makes signs. Lo Diem Yisrael Osi Metzorim Shalmakol Bizman Shepnei Mishal Achiv. Shem is making signs to Bnei Yisrael to see if they're doing the will of God. And the Gemara in Baba Basra says that on the one hand, sometimes Baba Basra Daf Tzadi Tes Amanav says one time. You know, one of them said that one pasuk says Pnei Mishal Chiv, they're facing each other. One says Pnei Mabayis, they're looking downward. So what's the difference? So Lokasha Kamis Mancha Osim Ritzon Shemakom Kamis Mancha Insha Osim Ritzon Shemakom. When they're facing each other, or maybe even when they're embracing each other, so then that shows that Hashem loves us. We're in good stead with Him. And when the Kruvim are facing down, so it means we're not in good stead with Hashem. In other words, the Meshech Chachma understands that they were kids, or maybe male and female, maybe two male, whatever approach it is, but it's a barometer of our relation, of the relationship between God and Bnei Yisrael, whether we're fulfilling the will of Hashem. And what's fascinating is that the Gemara in Yoma tells us a famous story in Daf Nun Dalet Amud Beis, that when the non-Jews came into the Heichal, when they destroyed the first place of Migdash, Ro Kruvim Urim Zebazad, they saw the Kruvim were embracing each other. I'm like, what? This is weird. They said, this is Klal Yisrael. They're engaging this, the holiest place. They're engaging the holiest place. They open up and they see that Kruvim seems like a sexual thing. And how could they be embracing each other? And what's fascinating here is, of course, the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash is a time when what? Hashem seemed to not be so happy with us. Yet, the Kruvim are embracing us. So, like, there is this tension between God's everlasting love for us, which the Kruvim represent when they're embracing, and also, and demonstrating the lack of love when we're not doing what we should be doing. And by the way, that could also be the difference between the parent-child relationship and the spousal relationship. If it's like a barometer of how we're doing, so that's like the parent disciplining the child, right? You know, we're looking down, the Kruvim are looking downward, Shem disciplining us. That's the parent-child relationship. Versus, that's more like the barometer versus perhaps the spousal relationship, showing our love for each other. But as I mentioned, at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the Kruvim embraced each other. And maybe the point is, even when we're being punished, Hashem still loves us. In other words, Hashem still loves us, but sometimes He needs to discipline us if we act inappropriately. But ultimately, He will send us the message when we need the message that He still loves us. So those are three different approaches, or three or four different approaches about how to understand the identity and the purpose of the Kruvim. Large-winged birds we live a life of Torah, we spread our wings upward, we transcend this world heavenly to heaven. Second approach, two angels build the emuna in the malach, to build the emuna in the nevuah, to build the emuna in the Torah. Or the third, to demonstrate our love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or barometer of our love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the proviso that even if things are really bad, that's when perhaps Hashem needs to show his love for us the most, and he does.
Wow.